are listening to The Kevin Smith Show.
Comments and views expressed on The Kevin Smith Show are those of the people who make them and do not necessarily represent the views of Kevin Smith, The Kevin Smith Show, or any of its affiliates or advertisers. Good evening, ladies and gentlemen.
You are listening to The Kevin Smith Show.
Well, what in the world was that? Good evening, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to The Kevin Smith Show. We're getting, it's like a double-barrel shotgun. We got blasted twice. Anyway, welcome to The Kevin Smith Show, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, Earthlings, Martians, and Nibiruns. We are glad you're here. If you're new and you've never listened to the show before, a special welcome to you. I'm absolutely delighted that you're here, and I hope you make a habit out of it. It's a great habit to get into. You need to know that we have a free weekly newsletter, if you don't know that. And you can subscribe to it by going over to my website at kevinsmithshow.com. kevinsmithshow.com has when you get there, you'll see a little button, and the button has red letters, and the red letters spell K-Files E-Zine. K-Files E-Zine. All right, now, when you click that, it takes a few seconds to subscribe, and that's it. You can unsubscribe anytime you want to. Now, let's see. Interesting stuff coming from NASA about, you know, I'm interested in Mars, and I'm interested in the moon. I'm interested in space exploration, space travel. So anything that comes out about that, I sort of pick up on it. It's interesting to me. And so, but an interesting thing from Michael Griffin, of course, he is the administrator down at NASA. And he was speaking about NASA's future mission priorities at the International Astronautical Congress in Glasgow, Scotland, this week. And he said, you know, Mars is not automatically the next destination simply because humans have already been to the moon. And then he went on to explain that, yes, we've been to the moon, but humans have spent a total of some 27 days on the moon, and the moon is the area, the size of Africa. And he said, you know, there's a whole lot more that we need to learn, and we need to even learn about survival there before we send somebody to Mars, because if you go to Mars and you get it wrong, they die. The experiment that he proposes would be to, first of all, place a crew on the space station for 7 or 8 months, and then take them from the station and land them on the moon and ask them to survive there for 9 months to a year with no further assistance other than what they have brought with them. And then after that, return them to the space station for another 6 or 7 months and then back to Earth. All with no extra assistance, he says, because that is what it will be like when we go to Mars. Unless we can do that experiment successfully, the first crew to go to Mars will not come back. You know what? He makes a very good point. He makes an excellent point. And I think that we need to get started on that right away. There's plenty of room on the space station right now, And I say, let's go. Let's get it going. Let's get started. My guest this evening is John Hutchison. John Hutchison, if I can get him back on the line here in just a moment, will be with us to talk about his very amazing work in anti-gravity. Don't go away. And welcome back. This is the Kevin Smith Show. I am the Kevin Smith, and we are privileged to have with us this evening John Hutchison. John is, I am not speaking out of turn. Aha. There goes the music again, and I now see what is the deal. It won't happen again, I promise you. John, I know I'm not speaking out of turn because he told me this himself, is sometimes referred to as the mad scientist, particularly when he's going through airport security, and we'll get him to tell us about that. But John is a scientist, and he is a scientist extraordinaire. In 1979, while researching longitudinal waves, or some people call them Tesla waves, John discovered what has come to be called the Hutchison effect. The Hutchison effect causes heavy items to levitate. It turns metal into jelly, or in some cases causes it to just snap. And in a very rare, I don't mean rare in the sense that it doesn't happen often, but a very odd, set of circumstances, it causes items of disparate material to fuse together without displacement of matter. Odd stuff. John, welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show. I am delighted you're here.
Oh, it's a real honor to be with you on your special show. Thank you very kindly.
John, let's talk about the Hutchison effect. For those who may not be real familiar with it, let's kind of describe it, because it's not just one single phenomena. It's sort of a basket of phenomena. A lot of different things happen in the Hutchison effect. So sort of give us a thumbnail sketch of that, and we'll go from there.
For sure. It was an accidental discovery, and it was then promoted by George Hathaway and many others into the military-industrial complex. But the Hutchison effect is utilization of Tesla coils, static generators, and radio frequencies that cause things to move around by themselves or levitate, float in the air, causing metals to turn rubbery and jelly-like, fusing them together or melding them together, and causing strange, very strange aura kind of effects, like huge ball of light would appear from nowhere and nobody would really know what it was. It would cause many different things to happen. It would take an object and put it somewhere else, perhaps. Its effects are away from the equipment, not in the equipment itself, like most electrogravitics do have a direct connection to them, or they have coils above and below. But in this particular case, the effects happen away from the machinery, and it's ported up to, I believe, 300 feet away. And of late, 10 city square blocks in the West were affected by it this year.
10 square city blocks have been affected by it, right?
That's right. In New Westminster here, and that's brought in the fire marshal and, of course, the mayor of New Westminster, who closed everything down. Although the mayor was more supportive, he loved this kind of stuff, and he just simply said it was not zoned for a lab or for levitation or this kind of work.
Not zoned for levitation.
Nope. Sounds kind of funny, I know. It's just that it looks like they will be doing it again, of course. But
all right, so that happened this year?
This happened this year, yes. Just after I demonstrated to some scientists from Austria, as well as Vancouver, Canada, and then to Tom Skye of Los Angeles, California. And then after that, I was doing it so often for film crews and that, too, on a sit-down, turn everything on, it just started to happen. So,
all right, now what sort of effects? We're talking about 10 square city blocks have been affected by it. What happens in that 10 square city blocks?
I am told by different parties that everybody got ill for a second. And they were coming back through emails to me, doctors that I know, saying that people were sick for an instant.
And what do you suspect causes that?
I honestly think it maybe was a gravity wave that went out. An artificial gravity wave or a distortion in the actual gravity space-time continuum.
All right, I want to get to that part of the effect in just a moment. But let's talk about this phenomena where materials fuse together. You've had, I'm just using this as an example, but something made of wood and something made of metal that get fused together. Sort of describe that for us, and we'll go from there, because I've got a couple of questions about that.
Okay, it was kind of brought my attention by other scientists that would analyze the metal samples in Toronto, Los Alamos, and also at the Max Planck Institute. When they would take these samples and x-ray them or cut them in half, they'd find sawdust inside the actual metals or a block of wood, and sometimes other metals inside the metals. And the other effects that happen is that it produces alloys that don't appear anywhere, well, on Earth, according to what they say. And it also brings all the impurities in the metals to concentrations within it.
What do you mean by it brings them to concentrations?
Well, like pure copper within steel would congeal in an area. So when they analyzed it, they found that all the copper has gone out to one section.
I see.
Metal. Trace metals, that is.
All right, so this fusion of materials that are not, for instance, wood and metal, they're not alike. You know, that's really similar to what we have heard, the stories that we've heard, and maybe they're rumors, maybe they're real, about the Philadelphia experiment, where there were all kinds of objects that were fused into the and mixed with the actual metal of the ship, and you had, according to the stories, you even had some of the sailors who were embedded in and fused with the metal of the ship after the Philadelphia experiment. And this sounds a lot like this Hutchinson effect. Is it similar?
Well, very interesting about the ships and that. I've worked on warships and noticed that they do have a lot of exotic high voltage and high RF machinery in them, vintage warships. In this particular case, it's a high possibility, since I have a comrade in crime here, Ron Melloloni, who works at BAE Systems, DOD, and he's pulled out a huge amount of information on this. And we were actually to replicate it in 2006 for Hollywood. That hasn't happened yet. They're still working on our network TV show.
Mm-hmm.
Been kind of delayed a bit, and it goes on and on with more delays. But I thought for sure a couple months ago I'd be in Valcourt, Quebec, but Charles Bombardier, who's funding some of the aspects of the show, especially the free energy aspects of it. But Ronnie and I would talk about this in great details and how we'd actually do this. And I tried a miniature experiment in 2006 with a toy warship that came in my hands by pure luck. It was a foot long, and I had unusual results happen to that device, actually.
Mm-hmm.
I had sparks and flames shooting off of it, and the water itself would start levitating out of the container it was in, and it appeared to blink in and out of time. Now, I can't say for sure if that's real or if it's camera problems, because the camera electronics seem to get affected a little bit, But at least I have maybe several hours of that particular experiment I did in the summer of 2006.
As a matter of fact, I've seen that video, and you were on with me, I believe, right after the experiment. Ron Milione was on with me right before it, and so we knew it was coming up. And then you did the experiment, and then when you were on, I took a look at the video clip that you had of the experiment. It's pretty amazing stuff. Now, the reason that I brought that up about the Philadelphia experiment is because it appears to me that the Philadelphia experiment, if it were real, when I say if it were real, it's one of those things where, you know, we've got a bunch of people saying, well, there's this and this and this that shows it's real, and then you have the official statement saying, no, it never happened. So be that as it may, assuming that it's real, there are several types of technologies that seems to be possible to spin off several technologies from the Philadelphia experiment. One of the technologies would seem to be time travel. Another of the technologies, it seems to me, would be teleportation. Being able, you know, like, beam me up, Scotty. And, you know, it seems to me that another technology that could be spun off of that would be actually weaponizing it and making it a weapon that you could aim at another ship and just cause everything to meld together and become non-functional. So, I mean, I could think of probably some more. Now, let's talk about time travel. Is there anything in the Hutchinson experiment that touches on time travel? In the Hutchinson effect, I mean.
Well, actually, there's some metal samples that were in the fields that seem to be accelerating ahead in time, like they're rapidly aging.
Really?
Samples were analyzed by Max Planck Institute, also by Hathaway. George hasn't formed any conclusions, but the Max Planck group says it seems like they're aging and going ahead in time.
Hmm.
So,
and what are they basing that on? I mean, what causes them to say that?
They would say that the magnetic properties of the steel and metals are changing very fast. The crystalline structures are really changing very fast. This appears to be also inside, I'm told, hard, dense, nuclear kind of material on a microscopic scale, and also transparent materials inside the metals.
All right, now...
And it seems formed to, like, time travel.
Mm-hmm.
Some discoveries were made at South Pole about some experiments with a balloon, that when they send up their balloon into the South Pole, into this weird cloud, that when they brought their instruments back, they were brought back about 5 years in time. Everything was reset. A repeatable experiment, which gained a lot of interest.
All right, now, are you pretty familiar with that experiment?
I got enough emails on it. It came from Lockheed.
Okay. Kind of describe for us in detail about that and how there would be something in the Hutchinson effect that might relate to time travel.
Well, both seem to be I've encountered white clouds, but I never took time measurements of them. The white clouds would appear around just an ordinary standing Tesla coil with other machinery around it. And in the South Pole area, it seems that there is this white cloud above these people that ordinary measurements of the geomagnetic field of the Earth and other tests like that with balloons that send up all their instruments and then pull it back down. In a particular case, they found that it reversed time back 35 years, which startled them a lot.
Well, I would think so. They lost 35 years worth of time. Do you think if they could put me in a balloon and send me up, I could, like, lose 35 years?
Well, I think that'd be a fun thing to do. I'd volunteer for it. Why not? I don't know if, they, if that's, you know, it's kind of an interesting email that I got hard copied real quick because I don't trust computers. They always seem to fall down or you lose data in them. So I have all this stuff tucked away. A lot of Soviet scientists were involved, and this whole thing went direct to White House. I am told now why it went there, I don't know, but good.
All right, so we've got this sort of swirling clouds and time portal at the South Pole. And you're saying that whenever you have a Tesla coil hooked up, you have a similar cloud that forms?
I have a cloud that forms, but I cannot see it until I get maybe within 10 feet of the Tesla coil and everything turns cloudy. To me, I thought it was very unusual. I didn't realize that I should have taken measurements of it.
Mm-hmm.
And when I readjusted it after maybe a couple of days, that this lost that cloud effect. But we've had other strange things like multicolor stuff appearing all around us, and luckily it was caught on Super 8 millimeter film along.
All right, now what do you think is causing the cloud?
Good question. I don't know. I do have a lot of question marks about that. Whether it was something that was oscillating at a super fast rate, or it was breaking up actual, transforming water vapor into, I don't know.
All right, now what sort of energy are you transmitting, or what sort of energy are you creating or generating in order to create the Hutchinson effect?
Well, in its most early stages, it was primary power. 110 volts at 75 watts, up 400 watts. Then later on, when I actually got it in more predictable and more reliable conditions, I got up to 4,000 watts.
Mm-hmm.
Using and replaced a lot of components with vacuum tubes. And vacuum tube technology picks up a lot of energy just to get what the results you want from RF generation equipment and that. So I thought, well, I wanted to have this so that I can sit down, turn it on, people can film it, do whatever they want with videotapes. So I did that more so in the late 1980s than more so in around the beginning of 2000 and up to 2008.
All right. Now, I've looked at some of your videos. And we see things like, there's a chunk of metal that all of a sudden lifts off of the table or off of the ground. There's a bowling ball that's lifting off of the ground. I think it's a bowling ball. That's what it looks like. I'm sorry?
It's a cannonball.
Well, that's even better. A cannonball.
Yeah.
And by the way, has the cannonball been stripped of its gunpowder on the inside?
Well, it was a casting of a round ball. I don't think it had gunpowder in it.
Okay. I don't know if you're aware, but a lot of those cannonballs, old cannonballs, are loaded with gunpowder so that they explode on impact.
I'm lucky in that case. I would have probably known, too, if there was any kind of holes or something in it that would indicate it was full of powder.
Yeah. All right. Now, what sort of energy are you generating that's causing those to levitate?
Roughly the same amounts, anywhere from 75, 400 watts. In that region, I would say, because the cannonball stuff was late 80s. So I would be pushing close to 4,000 watts power at that time.
Yeah, I understand the power, but I mean, how are you? Is it like a radio wave that you're transmitting, or what's happening there?
I'm referring to the main power, like your outlets for 110 volts, roughly is the main primary power that's broken up into RF currents, Tesla signals, Tesla waves, and electrostatic energy. That drives motors, variable capacitors, and devices like that, and vacuum tubes.
All right, we have to take a break. John, we'll be back in just a moment. Ladies and gentlemen, don't go away. We have more with John Hutchinson and the Hutchinson Effect right after this. And welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show. This is Kevin Smith, your host, and my guest this evening is John Hutchinson. John is Canadian, and he is one of those scientists that thinks outside the box, and that's why he gets a lot of results that a lot of other people could not even imagine. John, I don't know if you heard at the beginning of the show where I was talking about NASA's announcement, or actually Michael Griffin, the administrator at NASA, his announcement this week that he thinks that we need to have a very protracted experimental phase involving sending astronauts to the space station for 7 or 8 months and then on to the moon, and no assistance once they get to the moon, and then they have to be there for 9 months and then come back to the space station for 6 months and then back to Earth. He said if we can't do that experiment successfully, then the first manned mission to Mars will fail. Now, one of the things that, I mean, you know, you're science, your experimentation that has led to the Hutchinson effect, seems to me that it, like the Philadelphia experiment, sort of portends the possibility of teleportation. Would I be right or wrong? Yeah, I don't know. Somehow we had your mic off. Try it again. You did what now?
Oh, well, we had many objects seem to vanish from the laboratory from one location to another location in the lab. So it would indicate that teleportation was possible.
And you know for sure that it was in location A before the experiment was switched on, and then it later it wasn't there, it was in location B. And you know that for sure?
Oh, yes, because I was mostly the operator, and then the other folks were always taking photographs. Pre-experimental pictures, as they call it, and then would analyze the pictures afterwards.
All right.
And they'd see things moved around and transported somewhere else.
Now, did they disappear from view and then reappear, or did they levitate from one place to another?
That's a good question. I can't honestly answer that. It seems like some objects have actually vanished and reappear very quickly.
All right, now have you done, John, have you done any experimentation specifically looking into the possibility of teleportation?
I never set my goals on it. It's more or less fire up the equipment and see what happens kind of attitude. Our hopes were a good levitation or distortion of metals, but on occasion other things seem to happen quite a bit, such as the multicolored lights and other strange things, or glass breaking and other things being levitated right out of the target area.
You know, if teleportation could be made, if it could be developed and perfected so that humans could do it, and I've had a guest on this show that says that it has been done and that it is being used, I can't verify that. I don't know. But if we could, it would put all the rocket builders out of business. So all you'd have to do, it'd be like Stargate, you know, you just aim it at the planet that you want to go to, and dial it up, and walk into it, and walk out on the other planet.
I know there's some very exotic Austrian experiments doing that kind of thing, but it's only like a few atoms at a time.
Well, Ted Tweetmeyer, I don't know if you know Ted, former project manager for NASA, and he's an electrical engineer, and he said on this show several times, he has said, it is being done, and with humans. And he said it has been done successfully, and it is being done, and he said it has been for quite some time.
Well, I would say most likely that's true, because the Black Ops world are many, many, many years ahead of commercial stuff out here. And I know some folks in that world that do say a few things once in a while. So it's probably highly likely.
Well, this could really be bad news for the stock in these companies that build rockets. But I think it would be great news for space exploration.
I think so. I was approached by NASA a couple of years ago by Duke Fuhlenstein of the Kennedy Space Center for cooperation, and they had a meeting. And however, their division or their director said, no, we just got to continue on with the main projects kind of thing without deviations.
And what was that about? When you had a meeting about what?
Well, they had a meeting on getting the Hutchinson effect into NASA and exploring it. So after that, I'm told by Duke that their division head said, no, we got to continue on with our projects.
So we have to keep going the same direction we're going, whether it's the right one or not, right?
Well, basically, yes. And it also seems to be the same consensus with McDonnell Douglas, who explored my work in person many years ago. And they were going to get some major funding, but that never transpired. Also, the Army never came through with $36 million in 1985. We were waiting for months for that to come through, and then nothing ever happened, so... Very interesting. Odd offers like that.
Well, you're really very lucky. There was a guy that developed a way to turn water into fuel, and very successfully, and you literally could run your car on just water, and got a contract with the Army to outfit a bunch of the Humvees. And had a victory celebration dinner for getting the contract, and got killed at the victory celebration dinner. So in that respect, you've been very, very lucky.
Well, I was supposed to work with the U.S. Pentagon a couple of years ago. They showed my videos in the building there, and to 400 officers, I'm told.
Mm-hmm.
I was not there, and got a standing ovation, but I didn't want to cooperate really to be funded and go that on that particular path. I decided that no, I enjoy just simply doing it for television networks.
Mm-hmm. Well, you've actually had you've had NASA take a look at it. You've had McDonnell Douglas take a look at it. The U.S. Army has taken a look. The Pentagon has taken a look. And who else? You've had scientists in from all over the world taking a look at the Hutchinson effect.
Yes, we had the Canadian Department of Defense and their teams that took all types of videos, and they simply classified it as a matter of national security. So I could never get the videos returned to me. And after a while, they denied ever coming out here, although I have their letters and original envelopes and everything else as evidence that they were here.
Well, what do you think that means?
I think it means they just want to, well, I'm told by others that they just want to get the information and replicate it themselves. I'm told this a number of times.
Mm-hmm.
Develop it and hope that I don't develop it, because I'm not, because I refused actually signing certain contracts.
Well, John, what are some of the things that the Hutchinson effect could be used for?
That could be used for space propulsion, probably even warp drive, as they call it. It can be used for elimination of nuclear waste. It can be used for alternative energy sources. It can be used in metallurgical sciences. Also into exotic manufacturing of unknown alloys. I have a worksheet on that somewhere, which they go into great detail on all the different applications. As my teams, they prepared all these documents for the DOD, Department of Defense.
All right, how could it be used, John, to eliminate nuclear waste? What does it do to eliminate nuclear waste?
It appears to, when I was working with it, late 80s, it appeared to drop off or eliminate background radiation.
So it's like it just turns the volume down?
Actually, to a few counts per minute instead of your normal 15 counts per minute.
Mm-hmm.
In a wide, wide area.
All right. And how then could you use it as a propulsion system for spacecraft? And why? What would be better about it?
For propulsion, you could go to light speed and beyond that. Because you're using actual anti-gravity propulsion based on working with gravitons, particles.
All right. Now, is that what's happening? I mean, with the Hutchinson effect, are you generating gravity waves or are you generating anti-gravity waves? And, are we dealing with gravity here?
We're actually dealing right to the heart of gravity, and that's the gravitons. I think we're producing coupling of the gravitons to, let's say, objects, and actually adding a positive type energy to it, because we have levitations which appear to have continuous power applied to them, some of the test samples that were analyzed.
In the in one of the videos, there's a cup, and it looks like it has water in it, and it looks like the water just jumps right out of the cup, keeping the same shape as the cup. Is that water?
Yeah, I think that was, if I remember correctly, I got like hours of videos, and I think maybe it could have been either orange juice or apple juice.
Well, it wasn't orange in color. It was. It appeared to be clear.
Clear liquid?
That's what it looked like.
Well, it could have been a cup of water, too. We played with water quite a bit, which sometimes makes quite a mess.
All right, now...
And like round balls of the stuff floating around in the air, too. And unfortunately, we never got that on video or Super 8 millimeter film.
All right. How far from development is the Hutchinson effect? How far from development is it? To being able to actually be used as a propulsion system for space travel. How far away are we with that?
Actually, not too far away at all, from my point of view. Now, from the military-industrial complex, they might already have it.
Mm-hmm.
They're using it. Well, I can't prove it with documents or anything, but they've had it for a long, long time, and they have big labs working on it, and they get little bits of information once in a while about it.
Mm-hmm.
And for my team members who said, well, you know, they just took it and ran with it and developed it. But from my point of view, research level, probably a couple of years when you could have something that was quite predictable and usable. And it's the same with the crystal power cell thing of mine, too, that is almost ready for factory production.
What is the crystal power cell? We've got less than a minute, so just a thumbnail sketch, and we'll come back and discuss it after the break.
Well, it's ordinary minerals being treated in a special way that produce electrical power.
Are these the batteries that never run down?
Yes, that's right.
All right. I want us to talk about those. We did mention those in the previous broadcast, one of the previous broadcasts when you were with us. But today, while I was looking around on the internet, I actually found some photographs of you and those batteries, or crystal power cells, and I had not seen those before, but I've got some questions sketched out about those as well. All right, we're going to take a break, folks. When we come back, more with John Hutchinson, one of this planet's premier scientists. He thinks outside the box, he gets results outside the box, and the world has been coming to see. We'll be back right after this. Welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show. I'm Kevin Smith, your host, and my guest this evening is John Hutchinson. And, you know, John, you must have some sort of personal affinity for Tesla and some of the trials and tribulations he went through, because you've really been through the ringer.
Through the ringer. With Tesla, I was always interested in his work when I was a kid, so I set out replicating a lot of his equipment and got more and more involved in it, and then I got more and more involved in other old-timers' work, like Van de Graaff and Henry Hertz and all these old pioneers, Steinmetz, and I was trying to build the machinery to the exact time period. I'd fire it up, and wow, what fantastic kind of sparks and things that happen out of that, or unusual effects. So the effect that was called the Hutchinson effect, named by George Hathaway and Pissarro, was an accidental discovery I made.
Accidental? You weren't trying to get this effect.
No.
It just sort of happened.
No, it just happened by accident, and if I never mention it, let's say, to a gentleman by the name of Mel Winfield, perhaps nobody would have ever done anything. So I mentioned it to him at a meeting, and then he mentioned it to some other folks. The next thing I know, I was being interviewed by George Hathaway and Alex Pissarro on what I'm doing, and that what I'm doing is rather important. I said, oh, no, I mean, I'm not even a scientist. I mean, why would it be important? And it took them years to convince me that it was important.
You didn't consider yourself to be a scientist?
No, absolutely not. No.
Do you realize now that you are?
Well, I don't know if I still am that or not. I've got lots to learn. I can talk to scientists. I can talk to certain scientists on a level. I don't understand mathematics or any of that stuff, but I mean, I never was trained to be a scientist.
Yeah, but you've okay. Well, then we'll say a scientific inventor. You have just sort of tinkered your way into some of the most important discoveries of our time, and you know, now Tesla was trained as a scientist, but the way his mind worked. If his mind was a train, it ran completely off the tracks. And I don't mean in a train wreck. I mean it just didn't need the tracks that science had laid down for it. And had Tesla's mind worked according to the tracks that had been laid down by scientific training, we would not have alternating current today. I would not have lights here. I would not have a camera in front of me, and the computers would not be running on alternating current today because of the fact that he thought off the tracks. We had the technological boom of the 20th century. He invented the 20th century. It's quite possible that you have invented the means for us to travel the stars. Maybe we are using it, and maybe we're not. There are rumors that are out there, all kinds of rumors, you know. But there are rumors that are out there that we already have faster-than-light travel. There are rumors that we already have teleportation. And again, I don't know if those are true. But if they are true, these can be traced to Tesla and to you.
Mm-hmm.
You ever think about that? You ever think, okay, well, we're going to Mars one day, and the trip is going to take us about 45 minutes, and I did it. You ever think about that?
Well, I never thought about me doing it. I thought of other people doing it. Eventually, that life, even life in the old age, would be understood and reversed, as well as hyperdrive would be understood very soon. I thought for sure in 1980 we'd be going off to Mars. I was looking forward to that date.
Why did you think that would happen in 1980?
I don't know. It just seemed that something in my mind was telling me that this was feasible.
And the last time that you were here, and then tonight also, when I ask about this faster-than-light travel, you said we're very close, maybe 2 years away from it if we really got on it. It must not be that difficult to do.
My opinion, it's not, and that's applicable to alternative energy that I've been working on for a while, and it's just nobody's got the, what can you call it, the excitement to go into factory production right away with this stuff. Kind of strange. It's like in that some areas, it's like there's a certain apathy kind of attitude.
It's like a firewall for progress.
Yeah, well put. I like that. A firewall for progress. Yeah, it's like with the power cells, I've demonstrated them in Hiroshima City and other locations and made many of them for different people, but it seems that...
Well, let's talk about those power cells for a minute. Now, you, and this is really, really apropos for our time right now, because... We're watching as our economy is in crisis as a nation. Really, all that's happened is that Wall Street is now facing the panic that everyday families have been facing day after day after day for quite some time. And just the panic of, you know, I'm not talking about people who don't work. I'm talking about people who are working every day and wondering how are they going to put food on the table. And they now Wall Street's facing it. But that means that this is a very apropos time for us to talk about alternative energy. Billions upon billions upon billions of dollars of our national wealth have already been transferred overseas in exchange for petroleum. And you successfully built batteries or energy cells that draw energy from the space around them. It's not theory. You did it, and some of them are still in use, are they not?
Yes, actually, they are still in use, and people play with them and test them and send me the results through emails or letters. There's one sitting in Hiroshima City still running. It's actually, you know, it's actually very confusing. I had a partner, Grant Romund, who from Beverly Hills, good friend of mine. We worked together on the power cells and put together all the information, scientific data in a video as well as documents in 2000, saying in 2000, I actually downloaded all that stuff onto YouTube, but he was saying in 2 years we'd have ourselves a perfect battery system that would power all kinds of electronics, and then later on we could power vehicles. And that's 2000 already. And it seems,
you know, I just a side note. I saw an executive, I believe in the oil business. Yeah, he was. I won't name the name of the company, but I now remember it. He's an oil executive. That said, well, you know, the auto industry tried the electric cars, and the public, you know, the public just didn't like them. And that's not the case at all. The people that had them loved them, and when they were recalled and destroyed, there was even a movement among those people petitioning the auto industry to let them. We'll buy them. Let us keep them. And no. And they called them all in and destroyed them. And that it's just simply not true that the public rejected the electric car. That isn't the truth. And now, of course, they're talking about alternative energy, but they're talking about stuff that really is dumb. Getting it from corn. Well, that's corn that's not going to the table now, and so the price of food went up. And the price of that so-called alternative energy or alternative fuel is higher than petroleum. And, yeah, I mean, none of that makes sense. it's not expensive to build these fuel cells or these energy cells that you built, is it?
No. They are made out of common minerals, treated in a special way, and can be put into mass production. They're factory compatible. No moving parts.
And how do they get their energy, John? Where does that come from?
Well, the energies that they collect is what they call zero-point energy, or the Casimir effect, which was discovered a long, long time ago by Henry Casimir. And it's when you have two little tiny miniature metal plates put together, when you push them together, there's an excess of energy. But in this particular case, I got the idea to put in there a piezoelectric material, so the plates, when they're trying to move together, will produce yet more energy.
All right, we have to take a break. We'll continue with that when we come back, and we'll open up the telephone lines for you as well. Ladies and gentlemen, John Hutchinson on The Kevin Smith Show. We'll be back. Welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show. Welcome to those of you who are joining us just now in this second hour. And by the way, do your best every night to join us right at the beginning in the first hour because, ladies and gentlemen, if you miss a single second of this show, you will miss an entire universe of information. That is not just talk. Those of you who have been listening to John this evening, John Hutchinson, know that is the case. So we want to welcome you if you're just now joining us. We're talking with one of the most significant inventors of our day. He said that he's not actually a scientist, but actually he is, from my point of view. He just goes about it differently. We have a caller on the line. Let's take the call, and then we'll get back to our discussion of the fuel cells. Caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and where are you calling from?
Hello, this is Kevin from North Bay, Ontario, formerly from Iroquois Falls, Ontario.
Hi, Kevin.
Hey, guys. How's it going?
Going well, sir. What's on your mind?
Well, John, can you hear me well?
No, he can't.
I can hear you.
Oh, you can? You
okay.
Can. Yeah, he can hear you. Go ahead.
Okay, well, John, I don't know if you feel aware, but I strongly believe that some of this energy technology has already been developed before. A long time ago, I think that a lot of the stuff that Nikola Tesla came out with, I don't think a lot of it you won't find in a lot of the textbooks.
When you say that you think it was developed a long time before, how long before?
I think a lot of this technology had been developed by other people before and it was suppressed. And the reason why I think that is I think I remember the last time that either very low cost or free energy was developed, I think it was alcohol, when we found that the alcohol could use as an energy source that was a lot more efficient and a lot cheaper than gasoline. And then what happened? We had the prohibition.
That worked out real well, didn't it? The prohibition, that worked well.
Yeah, and that was all because of Standard Oil and their monopoly over the energy system. And I think that's why over the last 80 some years that a lot of the free energy stuff has either been suppressed. Anybody that come up with any technology, I think it was confiscated by either governments or these high corporate elites or whatever you want to call them. And it's because of the one. Finally, having the monopoly over the energy systems. I wanted to get your thoughts on that, John.
Very interesting statement. I'm not into politics that much and that kind of thing, but I know that a friend of mine, Dr. Franklin Mead, has developed a zero-point energy collector. He got actually a U.S. patent for it in 1996, December 31, and IBM bought up all the patent rights to it, which is interesting. So it could be that IBM may be the first to come out with some kind of alternative energy unit working on the principles of collecting zero-point energy and converting it into usable electricity.
Okay, and another question.
All right, speak up. We can barely hear you now.
Okay, I do have one more question. Have you ever worked with Dr. Stephen Greer with free energy research and probably to push for research into free energy? Have you ever worked with Dr. Stephen Greer on that? Because I know he's done some work on it also.
Well, I actually did talk to Dr. Stephen Greer some years ago about all this stuff, and then one of his representatives in 2006 came up here and filmed some of the levitation effects that he put actually on the internet now. But other than that, I haven't seen any of these folks around for quite a while.
All right, thank you very much.
All right, thanks for the call. All right, let's talk about the energy cells again for just a moment. You created these in what year?
Actually, it was 1993 that I made that first one in preparations for Japan when I went over there on lecture tours in 1994 and 1995. Then later on, the Japanese folks were coming over here in 96 up to about 1999.
All right, so 1993 to 1999 is when you were developing those. All right, let's go to the telephone caller. You are live on Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Yeah, this is Kevin from Northern Alberta.
Oh, two Kevins in a row tonight. That's
yeah.
I don't think we've done that
Canada,
before.
So yeah. A conspiracy tonight.
All right.
Okay, I wanted to ask John, what kind of voltage can he get from these crystal cells?
The voltage can vary anywhere from a quarter of a volt up to the highest voltage I ever had was something like around 21 to 26 volts direct current. And the energy from that particular high one was a quarter of an ampere. But from most of the cells, it's in milliamps.
Okay.
Or sometimes even below that. But I've discussed that with other scientists, and they know and understand the problems. What is needed is that these things be put in series and parallel so you get working energy. And according to my friend there and my partner in Toronto, it probably cost a couple hundred thousand dollars to do that. And unfortunately, our TV show, which was going to premiere all of this technology and funded by Bombardier,
mm-hmm.
is still on hold because it was going to be called the Experimental Factory because of some other projects in L.A. that are being worked on right now called the Race to Space, which involves conventional rocketry. And so I'm still on hold for my TV show, and this is going to be a pilot of 2 hours on the main networks on how to build a crystal power cell.
Oh, just like... Just like everything else, they put the good stuff on hold.
Yeah, absolutely.
Take free energy and any way to get ahead in the world. What's your feeling on the government actually wanting to put this technology into